Welcome back to Beyond the Booth. I'm your host, Cameron Capers, and as always, follow Beyond the Booth on Spotify and Apple Podcast. You can also find Beyond the Sound on Twitter and Instagram at BYDTHESOUND. And if you want to support the website and the podcast, you can make donations on Beyond the Sound's homepage. Today's guest is Rodnika from pop punk band Mint Green. How are you doing today?
I'm good.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I'm glad to be talking to you. So something that's really interesting to me is the history of black musicians and who make music that, you know, fall under pop or rock and roll. I'm really happy to be speaking with you because black women don't really get the credit they deserve, you know, across genres, especially in pop and punk music and rock music, excuse me. And so I wanted to talk about, just as a jumping off point, when did you first take an interest in writing music?
For me, it was definitely after seeing Hayley Williams perform on like, yes, Comcast. I don't even know, it was just like this MTV thing, and she was just like up, mm-hmm, there, like just jumping around and having like the best time, and I was like, whoa, like I want to do that. And mm-hmm, I've always had like an interest in music, but I didn't really think of the band thing until I saw Hayley. And so like that was like seventh grade for me when I was like 11, and then I just kind of became obsessed, mm-hmm, with like wanting my own band. It was tricky though, because growing up in a black household and like a Christian household at that, rock music wasn't very accepted. So yeah,
I 100% get that.
Yeah, so me and my brother would get reprimanded a lot for listening to like even like Linkin Park or like Paramore or like Benjamin. I don't know, any of those things.
Right.
But eventually, you know, my parents couldn't really control us anymore. So.
Right. No, that makes sense. Yeah, I grew up in a black Christian household as well. Luckily, my mom was like pretty cool about, you know, the music we listened to. I think usually it was like rap that she got offended by, just because of the stuff they said, obviously. Yeah. But yeah, that's very real. So I definitely get that. And I was doing some research for this interview, and I came across a conversation you had with the blog, City Looks Pretty. And there were a few things you said that I really related to. For one, you mentioned a feeling of intimidation breaking into the music scene in Boston, because there weren't a lot of bands that reflected Mint Green's diversity. You mentioned that you didn't really want to be like, you know, a token or like kind of meeting a quota for venues and festivals when it came to, you know, having a quote unquote diverse lineup. And that's something that my brother and I both, you know, experienced, because we, in high school, we're like, you know, the only two black kids like playing rock music, yeah, you know? And so it took like years, like once we got into Kansas City, like the music scene, to kind of break into it and really start getting booked for shows and everything. And then, like I said before, black women, you know, have it even harder than, you know, black men do in music. So I wanted to talk about like, how did Boston, like growing up there and playing music, kind of help you grow as an artist, and what are some things you'd like to see change like over time there as well?
Yeah, so it's interesting because like being a kid into high school, I actually feel like I was surrounded by a lot of diversity, like a lot, mm-hmm, of black kids, a lot of like Vietnamese kids, a lot of Cape Verdean kids, a lot of Dominican kids. And especially like the high school that I went to, it was kind of like this school where you had to like take a test to get in and whatever, whatever. And so like, it was kind, mm-hmm, of just like, there was no, it wasn't based off of like a neighborhood, you know what I mean? So like, even though,
right,
I grew up in a predominantly black neighborhood, my school kind of just represented the smartest kids from the city. Not saying I was one of them. I don't know how I passed the test, but that's just what my environment was. The tricky thing though,
right,
music is, well, actually, it's ironic, and I'm not sure, I think I might have mentioned this in one interview, but my high school band was like, it looked like a college like pamphlet. You know, there was me, this like dark-skinned black girl, and then our front person was this kind of like Native American and black front woman, and then our guitarist was like half white, half Puerto Rican, and then the guy, and then like our other bandmate was a like Hispanic and or a Black woman. She's adopted, it's this whole thing. But so we were very like, you know, we were just out here being the POC band. And
right,
that was really fun for a while. And especially in like school, when you're like the band, if there's no competition and there's no, you know, you're just like, oh yeah, you guys play music, you know?
Right.
But then when I started Mint Green, I wanted like a fresh start as opposed to continuing with that same like band name and that same entity. Cause I just remember consciously thinking that I wanted it to grow organically. And so starting this new project from like the ground up, that was my first time trying to diversify out of my, you know, neighborhood, out of my peers and my school and stuff like that. And I really, really definitely felt like an outsider because there were like all these bands that I, like local bands that I listened to, but they felt like unattainable. Like it felt really like clicky. And I was like, how do I, you know, talk to these people and do things?
Right.
So it was like a very, it was basically, you had to put in the effort, like no one was coming to me is what I'm saying. So like,
right.
I really had to like take the initiative and I got a lot of no's, in terms of like, you know, playing this show or that show or whatever. But, you know, slowly but surely, I think you almost have to kind of prove yourself, especially when you're someone that doesn't look like what people are used to seeing play rock music.
Exactly.
And then I think once we were valid in their eyes, that's when people were like, oh, like, you should play with us, you should play here, you should do this. And yeah, I mean, but like for the first, honestly, like, 2 or even 3 years of Mint Green, I still had in the back of my mind the idea that I needed to have my lineup, which at the time featured 2 white boys, like I needed them for our image and I needed them to be successful, essentially. Because I've had people say, not like fans or anything like that, but like media people or even like family be like, oh wow, like kind of like older folks is what I'm saying. So like older folks would be like, oh wow, this is nice to see a Black woman, 2 white boys and an Asian boy, you know what I mean, like I feel like right. Older folks are so like race oriented, which obviously like I get it, like they grew up in a world that was so much more segregated in that regard. And so like to them, it's like, wow, like you got, you know, you have these white boys and like you're Black and like you're going to go far because of this, you know. But like as the lineup changed and as I kind of began to grow my own confidence in myself, that's when I was. And actually someone had to tell me, like one of my friends told me, like, dude, like just because, you know, blank left, like you are the band, like, but I never wanted to center myself, you know, like I never wanted to be, even though I am like the front woman, I never wanted to be like the Ronica show, you know? And I always tried to put other folks forward and it was kind of like a safety net, you know, cause they were just white boys that could shred on guitar. But now finally after like 5 years, I feel like I am like accepted and confident in who I am, in this role, of the band. And it was hard though to break through, not only just from other people, but from also myself.
That's really interesting you said that, and you mentioned Hayley Williams being an inspiration for you. I remember I've seen an interview, she said the same thing, where a lot of people would say, like, oh, like this is just about you, and, like, it's not really Paramore, it's just, like, you and, like, a bunch of other guys, and she always talked about, like, she wanted to have a band and wanted to have that sense of community, you know, and not just be about her. I think that's interesting at the same time, though, because I think women especially are kind of forced to be like, you know, humble and like gracious, and that's not really fair because, like you mentioned, the white boys in your band, if it was them, they'd be allowed to be, you know, mediocre or arrogant or whatever, and people will still respect them. So yeah, I think that's interesting how you felt the need to kind of not minimize yourself, but like you said, not be the front of it, even though you are at the same time, you know. So I think that kind of is a glimpse into how hard it is being black in like white spaces like that, where you have to kind of find that balance of, you know, not wanting to feel like a token but also being confident in yourself. So yeah, that's really interesting you mentioned that. In that same interview, you also talked about people need to educate themselves about people of color, which I obviously agree with. And I think a lot of white people reacted to the criticism from last year during the summer about, you know, like being complacent about racism in the music industry and in general, you know. And there's a lot of interesting conversations about that, especially. And I think that's why it's so important for us to support our local scenes and like the DIY venues that are in our city, you know, because we give more of a marginalized artist platforms to kind of have, you know, a space to go to. And I wanted to talk about, were there any like specific DIY venues in Boston that kind of helped Mick Green kind of get a fan base and kind of build that confidence as a whole band?
Yeah, well, I think in the beginning, it was my friend at the time's basement. We would do basement shows at their place. And I don't even know. Honestly, we just did like anything and everything. Like, I remember this one time we went to this town that was like an hour away to play a set at like 1 a.m. at a bar with no one there, you know? And like,
I've been there before too.
Yeah, but like, I feel like that stuff like kind of gave us the fighter spirit. Or, you know, we're just young, scrappy musicians that are ready to like take on anything. And I found that like the more you're just doing things and the more your name is just on things, then like pure numbers, you're gonna get people looking at you, you know?
Right.
Because your name is on every random bill that there is. Good or bad.
Definitely.
But
no, yeah.
And but yeah, the basement scene for sure. Which is this town called Alston here, and it's, you know, Boston is a very college-y city. You know, we have Berkeley with all the music kids, you got Emerson, which is a lot of art kids and film kids. Northeastern also has like a great music program, like I don't know, Kimo Sydney Gish, like she went to Northeastern. And, you know, we have like this eclectic, I feel like, influx of youths more than maybe other cities would.
Right.
And so that makes for a lot of parties, basement shows, and just mingling in general. To be honest, I kind of say this jokingly, but also it's very true. Like Tinder at the time was very useful for not only me, but like a lot of people just trying to get to know people, because I didn't go to college and there was like also a lot of people coming into the city that didn't know anyone. And so I've surprisingly met a lot of my best friends from Tinder. I've gotten gigs from Tinder, and it was just like at the time this culture of just like, I don't know, people just wanted to get to know each other on like a friend level back in this. Would right. not do that now, but back in like 2016, it was just like normal. It was almost just like Facebook or something, you know, or Instagram.
Right. That's interesting.
Yeah, so that's how we would all kind of connect and like do shows and stuff. And then the basement shows turned into college shows because, you know, I feel like if I'm playing these shows with these people that are in college, that eventually they're going to be like, oh, you should play at our school. And then they can have to get paid for it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. It's kind of a snowball effect.
Exactly. So we would really just do anything and everything. And just, and I think that helped us kind of like stay tight as a band too. Like, as opposed to just like writing an album first and like putting it out, we just did a crap ton of shows and like, wrote stuff on the side, and like, because we were always doing shows, we just, I don't know, we were already ready to like, record things, you know what I mean? Like, we were already just, like, practicing basically every time we did a show.
So, yeah, after that, I was also reading that you guys toured internationally, which is really cool. So, can you talk about how that initially happened and then just the experience of going out of the country and playing music?
Yeah, that was very random, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. Basically, in the summer of 2018, we were playing a bunch of basement shows like usual, and one of them we played was with this band called Ghostbusters VHS.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just these little British babies, and it was their first time coming here, and they were all like probably like maybe like 16 or maybe 17 at the time, 17 or 18.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I think they were at least 17 or 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, they were fun and they were cool, and we just became friends on Facebook. And then when the next year rolled around, 2019, I felt like Boston was a little dried up for me. I felt like I was kind of not challenging myself enough, slash, I don't know, I felt a little stagnant. And so, yeah, so I literally just messaged the drummer who like I'm like the closest to, and I was just like, what if we did a UK tour? She was like, okay, let's do it. and then we just did it.
That's really cool.
I think I started that process in like March maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then in July we were over there.
Wow. And where did you go specifically?
We did Manchester, we did Newcastle, we did Leeds, London, Brighton, Bath, Lincoln.
Love the accent.
I don't wanna miss any in Glasgow, of course.
Very cool.
Scotland. Yeah, it was a really fun summer. It was like exactly what I needed. I needed like to feel that fire under me again. Mm-hmm. And like that really, really helped. So I'm like so grateful for that.
I bet.
And we just, yeah, it was their first UK tour as well, even though they're from there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were all in one van together, and none of them had their license. So me and my best friend that came with me were just driving on the left side of the road. And
that's hilarious.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how the I don't know what it is, but like when bands from America go to like other countries, they do so well a lot of the times. It seems like especially the UK, they just love like what's happening in America. It's like every band I've listened to in America that goes over there, it's like they just do so well, like all their shows sell out and everything, you know. So it's really interesting the demographic between America and other countries and how they consume music versus how we do it, you know. It's really cool. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, it's
like even just the culture over there, they like value music so much more. Mm-hmm. Like you, like we had guarantees for shows that like we didn't know anyone was going to be at, you know.
Right.
Which is the opposite, I feel like, in a lot of these bigger cities in America. It's more like you only get paid if you sell this amount of tickets.
Exactly.
Or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we got really fortunate to where our opening show there in the UK in Manchester was with Slingshot Dakota,
mm-hmm.
who's from Pennsylvania. It'd be just kind of like accidentally kind of just like did their tour out, mm-hmm. essentially. And so our first show was with them, and it was like sold out, and with a band over there called Fresh. And then it was like a really good start. And then they gave us like, you know, some advice and mm-hmm. whatnot, because they're like touring professionals.
Right.
And it was just really cool to just already have someone that like we knew there.
Right.
And the funny thing about the tour, it was actually just like me and my guitarist and my best friend that went over there, and the band we were touring with, Ghostbusters VHS, the drummer and the front person of that band learned all of our stuff ahead of time.
Wow.
So like when we went over there, we just practiced a couple times and then we were on the road.
Mm-hmm. That's wild.
So we all just squeezed in the van and the rest is history.
No, that's so cool. And I think those kind of moments really teach you a lot about yourself. And like you said, like lighting that fire under you and kind of reminding you why you're doing it in the first place.
Yeah.
No, that's really cool. And yeah, something I want to talk about is like music. Like my entire life has been so important to me. I feel like it's taught me a lot about life, like just through lyrics more than like a person could, if that makes sense. And I really love reading. Like I've been a huge reader my entire life. And I love music. I love dissecting lyrics because, you know, as listeners of music, we can like all listen to the same song and take away a different message, you know, or perspective from it, which is really beautiful to me.
For sure.
And I was listening to some of your older stuff and your guys' first EP.
Uh-oh.
No, it's good. It's good. It was 2016, your guys' EP Growth that came out. And I was listening to that again just to prep for the interview. I like to, you know, go back and kind of refresh myself on things. And there was one lyric that stood out to me a lot. It's from Timestamp, the song. And you said, why do I put my energy into people who will never care for me? And you say, it's normal and I'll be fine, but I still mind. And that was just like, whoa. Like when I heard that, I was just like, man, that's like a hit, you know? And that's so cool. That's something you wrote in 2016 still like can apply right now to someone else.
Yeah,
and it's just like it's very vulnerable, obviously, too. And I was wanting to know, like, as a journey as a lyricist outside of playing music, has it always been hard for you to be vulnerable? And then also, who were some singer and songwriters that kind of inspired you from a lyrical standpoint?
So I feel like I've accepted the fact that I'm more of a like song crafter and lyricist more than I am of a guitarist and singer. Like I was actually just talking about it with my bandmate the other day. I feel like I'm just really good at putting things together, like a puzzle or something. Like, you know, people can like bring ideas to the tables and I'll have my ideas too. And then I like make the song form. And I also, I'm just always writing in like my notepad, little fragments of things that like don't make sense. But then like when I want to write a song, I can just pull from those fragments, just put them together and like, boom, the song's written. And so with Timestamped and with the Growth album in general, I was more free to write, as in my life wasn't so busy. I don't know if that's the right word. Like I definitely had like a crap ton of side jobs because I didn't go to college and I was like, I still want to make money. So I legit had like, you know, four jobs at one point. But something about just like, something just about like living at home and being fresh off of my high school band, I had again that fire that was like, I'm gonna write these songs. And so I like went on a vacation with my dad to where he's from. He's an immigrant from this really tiny island in the Caribbean. And in the 2 weeks we were there, I wrote four out of the six songs for Growth. And so, yeah. And so like, even just the album art, it's like an artist's depiction of like my granny's backyard over there. Yeah. And so
I really like the cover.
That was a time for like a lot of like reflection and whatnot. And it was like my first time going there without my mom and my brother because my parents are divorced. And so there was just like a lot of like thinking and whatnot. So the songs just flowed out of me.
Right.
But with and with Headspace, Headspace was kind of a different experience because I was way more active now. I wasn't just sitting at home anymore. And we were actively like doing shows, and I was going through my life as like a 20-year-old and then a fresh 21-year-old, and that led to a lot of debauchery, which led to a lot of interesting situations. And so that's where that content came from. And so now with the stuff that I'm writing, I'm turning 25 in May, and
that's crazy. My birthday's in June. I'll be 25.
Cool. So now hey. I feel like I'm like a little bit more tame. My life is a little bit more stable. I have good friends in my life, mm-hmm. a good partner in my life. And so now I'm like, damn, thank you. But now I'm like, damn, what do I write about? Like, I don't have any like fuck girls or fuck boys. Literally.
Stability, I'm happy.
Exactly.
What is this?
So it has been a bit tricky to tap into my emo side for this record. But I think mm-hmm. what has helped me a lot is listening to so many different types of music. Like some of my favorite lyricists are, of course, Hayley Williams, and like seeing her transition into her solo stuff, which is so different than Paramore. So inspiring.
Oh
yeah.
My God. So good. So good.
I know.
I want to listen to it. It makes me sad because like what she's saying is like, so depressing, but it's so beautifully written. It's like,
that's so it's like, true. I hate I'm you so like, much. Oh, I love you, but you. I don't know. I don't know if I can listen to you like be this sad. I love you too much.
Right. I don't have the emotional fortitude right now to listen to this. It's so good though. Her growth is just like, it's insane to me. And I honestly, like, obviously Paramore is one of the biggest bands in the world, but I think Hayley Williams doesn't get the credit she deserves as a lyricist. Like, she's up there for me. Like, the way she says things is just like, she'll say something, it'll take like 5 days later. I'm like, oh my God, that's what she meant. Like, it's like she just says things in such a beautiful way.
I also got really into Soccer Mommy in 2018, who actually opened for Paramore.
Okay, yeah, I've heard a few of her.
And so
nice, yeah, she's
cool. I think always just kind of like looking out for new music to be, I mean, even like Billie Eilish, Lorde, you know, I love, I don't like, I always say that like I'm a top 40s girl, like I don't, you know, discriminate, you know, Lil Nas X, I love his new single,
right?
I love dissecting. I love dissecting the lyrics like you said.
I see I like Lil Nas X. I appreciate what he stands for, you know, especially me even like being a bi black guy, I get it. And him being like an visibly like, you know, gay black pop star, that's really important for like, you know, little black kids, 100%. And I get the message of the songs too. It's not my cup of tea. It's not a bad song, but I do appreciate, you know, the visual art and like, I mean, the visual, you know, the video and all that and like what it means, like 100%. I know it's all around. I obviously love that song too, just because it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
and
it was just reset.
Like
a moment,
you know, for pop culture to talk about, because like who is this kid, right? And Billie Eilish is the same thing. I think a lot of people gave her flack because I think her dad is famous, or both of her parents are, or something like that. I don't know the details, but I'm pretty sure like her dad or mom like works in the music industry. So people are saying like, oh, like she has, you know, all these opportunities because her parents, which is 100% real, you know, especially like white, you know, privileged kids kind of get the door opened up for them. But what made me a fan of her was she did a live performance with Alicia Keys and it was so good. They did, I think Ocean Eyes is what it was called. And her voice is beautiful. Yeah. She has a really impressive like vocal control and like, yeah, she can sing her ass off, so that's what made me get into her. So I definitely agree with you about, you know, not trying to be like, oh, like pop charts are like, it's all phony. Like, that's not true. There's definitely some good stuff if you actually
and like in
listen
terms
to
of
it.
Like industry plans, there's this artist from Boston here called Claro, and Claro used to play a lot of like, you know, like local shows, and she went to high school with like some of the people that would book, you know, basement shows that we were all playing with. But the reason why I know Claro is because when she got her first big like Fader article, there was a bunch of like DIY kids, like, I don't know if I can swear on this, but like pooping all over her, shitting all over her. And like brutal stuff. They're like, like one of the things that like stand out in my mind is like she was wearing like this kind of like orange and blue outfit, and they're like, like she looks like a Tide Pod. I'm like, oh my God, like what type of community? And that was like my first kind of inkling into like, dang, like I don't think they like people. I don't know, like exactly, like I don't know how else to say it. Like, and you know, I guess her dad, worked or works at Fader or something like that. But to me, the reason why she popped off is because her song and her video, Pretty Girl, went viral. She
she like, if her dad worked at this company, mm-hmm. why right. now would she just be doing this thing? And like,
exactly.
this whole conversation on industry plans has been going on. The way I see it is, yes, like nepotism and famous parents, you know, behind every indie kid is a pair of famous parents is like what, like, oh, you know, a bunch of tweets have been saying, and exactly. I agree with that, you know, in a lot of ways. But at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
no matter how much money you have or connections or ever, if people don't connect with your music, then it's not going to connect to the people. Like, and we see that so much with
exactly.
like plenty of people right. that just have money and release songs, but they're shitty songs, and so they don't have a fan base. I don't know if you've seen the recent like
Tramp oh my God. Stamp
situation.
Yeah, but, that's been my
look it up. Mm-mm, but in terms of Billy, like I don't know. I know her dad worked in construction, and her mom was like had like a little stint with acting, and she teaches improv and stuff. But at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
Phineas, you know, was in a band. He had a little mm-hmm. small part on Glee. He was trying to do the acting thing, but he also wanted to do music. And he had this song that he couldn't sing for his band. And so he asked his little sister, who was 13 at the time, to sing it. And that's what Ocean Eyes is. They produced it in their bedroom. Right. And yeah, and it popped off on SoundCloud.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
And she mm-hmm. never, you know, she was, it's actually pretty funny. Like, she was just a believer, you know, she had like her, yeah, like she was just like a normal kid and she got swept into this world and
right.
thank God she has a great voice and her brother write good stuff I feel like despite that, she still gets a lot of flack just for, I feel like being a woman and being young and whatever, but you can't definitely. Deny her talent, and you can't deny that people connect exactly. with her stuff.
Definitely, yeah. And like I said, that video for Alicia Keys, I was like, oh shit, like I really like her now. Like I never really, like, I knew like a couple of her songs. I was like, oh yeah, it's just like another, you know, pop girl, whatever. Like it's fine. But that video was like, yeah, she's really talented. Like you can't deny that. Like you can hate all you want to, but yeah, I like to give people credit where credit is due. Like I don't have any reason to hate on you. I did laugh. We brought up Clario because my friend, like, he talks about her being an industry player all the time. That's why I started laughing because we got in a huge argument. He's like, Cameron, like, she's fake. Like, she's not real. I was like, oh my God. But I'm actually a fan of her. So that's why I was laughing. That was funny you brought her up. But yeah, the whole conversation is just like, I get it, though, especially like dealing with race as being black. You know, like, we don't get those opportunities like that. Just, you mm-hmm. know, be
yeah.
whatever and just get, you know, everything handed to us, obviously, like you mentioned before. So. Yeah, I do understand.
And like one other thing too is I've very rarely, if ever, have seen the word industry plant attached to a male artist. It's always a woman or a girl. And it's like, why can't you just believe that they're talented and people like them?
That you're talented. Of course not. Right. It's so dumb. Yeah. Because men are allowed to be mediocre. And that's a huge conversation that's been going on in the rap world, especially with like the Cardi B's and Megan Thee Stallion's. Like, oh, she's only famous because she's like twerking and showing her body. And it's like, there's so many women in rap that don't do that. You still don't listen to me. So to say you hate women and this is like, get this over with. Like, why are you trying to like, you know, navigate this to where you're like, oh, like she's selling out her gender. It's like, oh my God. Like, first of all, Megan could out rap most of these men, and it's like, it's not about that. You just hate women. You're trying to like frame it in a way to where like literally. You're blaming them, and it's like, it's so annoying. People are just ridiculous. So,
I saw a TikTok one time that was like, my biggest red flag is if a guy on his like Tinder bio, like for the music section, he doesn't have like a single woman. And it's like, really? You couldn't think of one song by a woman that you like, you know what I mean?
Right. That's so crazy. Right. I feel like most of mine is probably women are like overwhelmingly. That's not even like progressive and like, you know, I respect women. I just think women are making a lot of better stuff right
they're
now.
Dominating.
And they are like kind of pushing the envelope when it comes to, you know, songwriting. Right, yeah, and like Megan, like for example, go back to her, like her, obviously Good News was not good in my opinion, like I'm just being honest, but her older projects are amazing. Like you can tell she's really like a student of the game and like loves to rap. Like, and yeah, like I said, she can out rap a lot of these men because like, most of these dudes all sound the same, look the same, and they don't even try. You know, it's really about like getting a good producer and having a good beat. That's all you really need at this point to have like a good song. So yeah, it's really just misogyny and just people being ridiculous. That's usually what it boils down to. So it's just like. oh my God, like, this has been going on for so long. How are you not tired of this already? Like, yeah, it's just, it's ridiculous. But my last question I wanted to ask you was, before we get out of here, like, moving forward, does Mint Green have anything planned for us this year?
I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say, but I feel like it, I mean, I don't think it would be wrong to say that we're working on an album. Working on in terms of, like, we just finished writing the 10 songs that we want to be on it. And because we only have two EPs, and like, basically, our goal for 2020 was to record, because we've spent the past like two-ish years touring. So like, we did international, we did like four in the US, and then like we did one at the beginning of 2020 in January before like the world shut down. And so our goal for 2020 was to like go to the studio and like give the people the content that they've been waiting for, because we've just been like collecting all these new friends around the world and around the US. But then obviously COVID happened and we were like, and so all of a sudden we had to like start doing stuff ourselves in terms of like demos and doing virtual shows. And I also, we got a different guitarist at the beginning of COVID. So there's like a lot of flux. Now I'm like very, very happy that we're like in a more stable place. And the LP that we're going to release is just something that we've just poured our hearts into. Like, we have songs that we, started writing in 2017 or early 2018 that are going to be on this. And then also songs that I wrote a month ago. So it's like it's covering a lot of time, but I think that is good, because, what is life other than just a collection of, you know, experiences throughout the time you spend on Earth?
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm so excited to hear it, because the other day Willow Smith dropped her new song, and it's so good. And that video is just like, I love so seeing black people do punk music. It just like warms my heart so much. Yeah, that song is amazing. I'm really excited for her album. Yeah, and that was like, this was like great timing in this interview, because like, oh my God, yeah, it's like another black woman in punk music. This is great. And like, obviously she's been doing this forever, so it's not like new to her or anything. But yeah, I just love seeing, you know, black people in spaces where we are kind of told we're not supposed to be, even though nine times out of ten we're the one that made it in the first place. So that's why it's just like, yeah, it's just so cool, like, just being able to talk to people like you and like just showing like the diversity of like being black. Like, we don't have to be the same, you know, and like, there's different sides to blackness and what we are interested in. So yeah, I'm really excited to hear the project. This is a great conversation. It was great talking to you. Yeah, of course. I'm really excited to hear the project, and we will definitely have to talk again soon.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, awesome. Well, I appreciate your time. You have a good evening.
Okay.
Bye. See you.